So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review, man.
But old Kogan, when I looked into your eyes, I saw walls. Walls filled with fear. Fear the red dick for you, Hulk Hogan, at Royal Rumble. I needed no friends. I needed no partners. Every man stands by himself like the ultimate warrior always has. Hulk Hogan, look at me, Hulk Hogan. Look at me.
Please.
Without the paint, Hulk Hogan, the desire to withstand the pain and give you the utmost in battle and combat at WrestleMania 6 still stands, Hulk Hogan, for I am the chosen one.
I get the impression that we've got a loose cannon on our hands, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, I'm excited for this, Lay. It's a review that I'm sure a lot of our fans online are looking forward to. The self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior, which we are going to be reviewing on today's episode. And it was a big week for us, Lay, as we had a child. It was our resurrection of Fight Network Radio, where we reviewed Raw. A new audio.
I don't know.
Spawn.
I don't know if we had a child. Maybe We
gave birth to a new...
No, we adopted it.
That's true. Fight Network Radio did exist prior in many different incarnations. But thank you to everybody who checked out the new show on Tuesday. We got a lot of positive feedback from people. So I think the plan will be to continue reviewing Raw each Tuesday.
Yeah, unfortunately.
A lot of people were very surprised that you would watch something current.
Yes.
They feel that you don't watch anything new. But you have a pretty good pulse on what's happening.
I like to frequent the websites. That's what I do. I wouldn't always watch everything, but you know what? I've always made an effort on Monday nights. It's just a ritual, like a lot of wrestling fans feel. It's just a ritual that at 9 o'clock on Mondays to turn on Raw.
So a typical week, you know, what will you at least catch parts of, like actually watching, not just reading recaps?
Pretty much just Raw. I mean, unless something really, really funny happens on a show like NXT, like you showed me.
I got to the office on Tuesday morning, Wednesday morning, because I usually watch NXT, because we don't get it here in Canada. I watch it, like, first thing I get into the office. And this segment, I just quickly went away and was like, you have to watch this segment for Eli Cottonwood alone. Because
the talk segment.
This was great. A lot of people hate these kind of segments. I think they're perversely entertaining, and Eli Cottonwood cutting a promo on mustaches was, to me, Sid-level fuck-up.
It was amazing. It was amazing. I just sat there, and I watched this at work, and I enjoyed wrestling very much at that moment.
It is ridiculously hot in here.
I'm fine.
Are you okay?
You're drinking a hot coffee.
I'm also drinking a coffee.
I got an iced coffee.
Ooh, For those that are living outside of Toronto, we're going through a heat wave in this city right
now. If you are outside of Toronto, even if you're in Shanghai, it's very hot. This is global warming taking effect.
Like, we're hitting like 40s here in Toronto.
It's even worse in Shanghai, I think.
Well, I don't live in Shanghai, so... Actually, wait, last year you went to Abu Dhabi,
yeah.
And it's something ridiculous. Like, you can't even go outside in some of the temperature.
Yeah, I went to Abu Dhabi to cover a jiu-jitsu tournament there, and I'd never been to that part of the world before, so I was very excited to go and do stuff. But the moment you get there, you just... Once you step out of your hotel room from a building that's not air-conditioned to the outside, you just don't feel like doing anything. So that whole trip, I pretty much just hung out in my hotel room, went to the pool a couple times. The moment you stepped out, it was just unbearable for somebody like myself.
I hate warm weather with a passion.
Do
just
you?
Just hate it.
Warm weather is good, but hot weather is tough. Tough to bear sometimes.
Well, let's go into this review, Way. It's The Self-Destruction of the Ultimate Warrior, a 2005 DVD release by the WWE. And
I mean, I could always see when they used to do that old show Confidential, mm-hmm. and they do certain little pieces where it was just designed to bury a guy. Like there was ones with Lex Luger after Elizabeth had died where they pretty much led you to believe in that Confidential piece that Luger killed Elizabeth. And they did other little pieces like that. And having that foundation of this company, it was just a matter of time before they did a full-out DVD production burying someone. And that's what they did here with the Ultimate Warrior, who refused to be part of a DVD project. And therefore, they went ahead with the self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior. And did you ever see this when it first came out?
I saw it when it first came out, so it had been a while before since I watched it. Was that really the backstory? Was that the WWE wanted to do some sort of DVD with the Ultimate Warrior?
They did contact him, and he just was not interested. They couldn't come to terms, and they went ahead with this project, just burying him.
Wow.
And I'm sure if the Warrior had come along, they probably would have changed things up slightly. Because actually, it was this DVD, it was right around the same time that they were putting together Bret Hart's DVD, mm-hmm. and Bret Hart would have gotten a similar treatment. If you remember that first DVD he came out, it was originally going to be called Screwed, the Bret Hart mm-hmm. story. Mm-hmm. And when Bret Hart came aboard, they actually even ran it by him if they could keep the title.
Screwed.
The Bret Hart story.
Wow.
So
amazing. You'll see from watching this DVD just how powerful the WWE is when they can threaten a man's legacy and there's really nothing anyone can do about it. It's not like the WWE has this forum where everybody, once they release something, everybody watches it. But I mean, what can the Ultimate Warrior do to react to it? What, do a You Shoot DVD? No one's going to ever hear his side of the story. That's how powerful this company is right now.
He has done that one big shoot interview that everyone can find online. And someone sent me, I think it was the producer of it or something, sent me a copy of that autographed by the Ultimate Warrior.
Really?
Which I don't even know if I've held on to it or not. I just remembered that now, actually. We could have done a dual review.
Yeah.
But I think this was more than enough Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
I do also want to mention as we start this review, for any of you guys who want a bit of a more balanced look at the career of Jim Helwig, the October 10th, 2005 edition of the Wrestling Observer newsletter, Dave Meltzer does a whole retrospective on Jim Helwig's career, and it's much more balanced and does give you the truth behind some of these stories. Because some of the stories in this DVD are just lies. Complete fabrications.
Yeah, I'd love to know, because I've never read that issue of The Observer, so I would like to know what is fact and what is fiction in this DVD.
Well, there are a few things I've pointed out that we will get to, and okay. You can all see how the WWE machine works when they don't like you. So we start off the documentary way where they kind of go over the 1980s wrestling scene with the big muscle heads that were really in vogue at the time, and how Warrior got his start working alongside Steve Borden as the Blade Runners, which was basically a concept that Rick Bassman put together. He was the promoter with Ultimate Pro Wrestling. He's been involved in mixed martial arts. Mm-hmm. I believe he was representing Bob Sapp for a while. And he put together this team to kind of, in the same mold as the Road Warriors, and they marketed themselves as the Blade Runners. And they started out in Memphis, Tennessee, and they didn't last very long here before they moved on to the UWF, where Jim Ross had his first interaction with Jim Helwig. And I must say, Jim Ross was just so entertaining in this DVD because he said everything with such a straight face,
yes.
but just these ridiculous statements. Yeah. Describing this guy who he had zero regard for.
A lot of people may cite in the team with JR and Lawler. A lot of people may cite Lawler as the funnier person, but it really takes a straight man to make any comedy duo work. And Jim Ross, a very underrated comedic performer.
Great delivery when he has a good line.
He just has that dry wit about him, and it even comes across in his blogs when he writes.
The whole time he spent in the UWF was encapsulated in about a minute, and then he left for World Class Championship Wrestling, where Ross states that Warrior found the UWF, quote, too intense.
The first jab.
Yes, the first of many. This was a slaughtering for 90 minutes. Then he went to World Class Championship Wrestling as the Dingo Warrior, and it led to him trying to leave Texas for the WWF and his tryout on the house show circuit. And during this part, this was when everything pretty much came out here. First of all, his pre-WWE career was summed up in 3 minutes on a 92-minute documentary.
Yeah.
Bruce Pritchard basically said his in-ring was the shits. Vince hated the Dingo Warrior name, and it didn't sound masculine. Now, I forgot to print this out, but there was a reader who sent us in, and he was telling me how a lot of people didn't know what the name Dingo Warrior meant, and he gave me... it's obviously, the dingo is an Australian-based animal, mm-hmm. and I forgot to print out the email. Maybe I'll read it next week. But anyway, that was the...
So this fan sent explanation explaining what
a dingo was, because in the DVD they say how no one knew what a dingo was.
We all know what a dingo is, but to be a warrior of the dingoes,
it didn't exactly send fear down anyone's spine.
He's not even Australian.
You don't know that. Parts unknown. Way could be
parts
from anywhere.
Unknown would be Australia.
Yes, exactly. At first, Vince didn't want another warrior because of the Road Warriors and the modern-day warrior, Kerry Von Erich. But somehow, Vince decided the ultimate warrior supersedes all other warriors within the industry. Well, what small-minded, like, pettiness. Our warrior will be the ultimate one.
Yeah, why not?
Sure. So he debuted October the 24th, 1987 in Green Bay on WWE television. And we get exclusive analysis from the Brooklyn Brawler, who claims he wrestled him 30 to 40 times, which you would figure they could find B-roll of one match involving the two during this lengthy analysis of his work with the Ultimate Warrior. But no, there were no clips of the Ultimate Warrior and the Brooklyn Brawler to be found. And they highlighted the most basic offense you have ever mm-hmm. seen from a performer.
The Brawler says he literally got knocked out 20 times wrestling the Ultimate Warrior.
We should maybe have a bullshit count of what we assume is a bullshit statement, yeah. because that would probably be one.
Thing is, you, as a viewer, maybe reading the Observer is a different story, but as a typical viewer, you have no way of disputing any of these
No, quotes. Not How at all. You know? We just have to assume this is true, and yeah. Brooklyn Brawler got 20 concussions in a month. They then discuss his theme music and his entrance. I enjoyed this because they spoke to Jim Johnson, the mm-hmm. director of music, formerly director of music. He has since left the company, I believe. Mm-hmm. And he describes the thought process of putting together his theme music. I thought this was maybe the highlight of the entire documentary.
Yeah, it was.
I've always enjoyed when this guy was describing like Vader's theme and Beyond yeah. the Mat. It's a little stuff like that that I find really interesting of putting together the whole package of how to present a character.
Speaking of like DVD ideas or documentary ideas, there's a whole 90 minutes you can do on Jim Johnson and the history of yeah. the music in professional wrestling. It was really fascinating to hear Vince McMahon comment on Jim Johnson too. It's something you never hear Vince ever talk about, and it was really cool to see. Current stars like Christian, Jericho, and Edge used in this documentary as
fans,
giving you know the perspective that you or myself or somebody else watching felt at the time that the Ultimate Warrior is popular. And so they say that a strong part about the character was that his entrance. And then JR basically says the entrance was great because the music created was great.
And then Bobby Heenan said, unfortunately, the bell then rung, and the match started. And we then go into a feud he had with Hercules Hernandez, which Ross describes as the blind DiBiase describes as the blind leading the blind. And then Ross adds that they were tough to watch together. So Hercules Hernandez, who has since passed away, was not on this DVD. They move on to Bobby Heenan and the weasel suit gimmick, with Heenan attempting to give advice to the Warrior during this program they had to slow him down, but Heenan insisted that Warrior just wouldn't listen. And then they have this weird sequence of horror music, and wrestlers speculate on where Parts Unknown is located. And this was the first where I can call bullshit on, because they designed this segment like Ultimate Warrior insisted he was from Parts Unknown, not that it was part of this marketing creation behind the Ultimate Warrior. And just the way they described it was like, this guy was crazy. Like, where is Parts Unknown? And then...
As if they've never done that before.
And I don't think it was even so much the people who were interviewed they were just given goofy questions about where do you feel parts unknown is, and they'd answer with some goofy answer, but they presented it in such a way where it was almost like they were making fun of this weird guy who insisted he was from parts unknown.
Yeah.
Like he was the only guy that was ever presented that way.
Yeah. They could have done that segment with a number of people, like the Undertaker, Death Valley.
So from there, back to the Brooklyn Brawler. And my God, the royalties this guy must have made off DVDs in the last 10 years is astronomical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I always hear of guys just cashing in on these DVDs. And Brooklyn Brawler, I'm sure he's living okay.
What, is he still in the company?
Oh, he's still there.
What does he do?
He's a lifer. I don't have any idea what he does. Same with Harvey Whippleman, who I don't know exactly what he does, but the one time... myself and Jason Agnew were at a house show in Hamilton, and we were walking towards the arena, and Harvey Whippleman walked past us, both hands carrying Swish LA. And so that's my only reference point of what this guy does. I don't know.
He carries quarter chickens for somebody.
Maybe half. You don't know. So then we go up to SummerSlam 1988 way, which featured the Honky Tonk Man dropping the IC title in 35 seconds. And Christian is interviewed here, who just marked out for this match because the Honky Tonk Man at the time, and still the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion of all time. And of course, the backstory to this match was that they wanted Honky Tonk Man to drop the title, and he did not trust the Warrior to take care of him at all in the ring, and it was his call to make this match as short as it was, and Warrior left with the Intercontinental title.
Hmm. Interesting.
Honky Tonk Man has told this story numerous times.
Okay. I buy it.
Then they show all the magazine covers and highlights of his matches, done to this Van Halen ripoff theme. It was like a remix of Jump that they put underneath this. So more work from Jim Johnson here. They described him as one-dimensional, just hitting high-impact moves.
Mm-hmm.
And then they described, they interviewed Vince, who says the Warrior represented the rebellious spirit of the 80s with his hair and his uncontrollable nature. And that society latched on to the Warrior.
Yeah. Don't you associate the Warrior with the end of the Cold War?
Yes, that's exactly what I think of.
Rebelling.
Yeah. Then we go into a segment I call Attack of the Promos.
I look above to the gods, and when you fall below the skeletons of the Warrior's past, the power of the Warriors will become the eighth wonder of the world!
Normal people, the people that walk the streets every day, we cannot understand!
The family that I live for only breathes the air that smells of combat! With or without the faceplate, I am the ultimate Warrior!
Must I prepare? You must ask yourself, should I jump off the tallest building in the world? Should I lay on the lawn and let him run over me with lawnmowers? Should I go to Africa and let him trample me with raging elephants?
This was my favorite segment on the DVD.
This was rather entertaining.
Yeah.
Heenan just flat out says he couldn't talk. Ross insisted that Warrior's title interview should have been subtitled. And then he emphasizes so they could have been understood by people. And that Warrior probably didn't even know what he was talking about. Lawler says that no one knew what he was saying, and that was probably for the best. And then they showed just a montage of clips. Yeah. Some of the highlights were Warrior yelling, should I jump off a building or lay down and be run over by a lawnmower or go wrestle elephants in Africa?
I thought Jericho said it best in this little portion. He says he didn't know what the Ultimate Warrior ever said, but it sounded cool. So, yay. And that pretty much sums up most pro wrestling promos, I find. Guys, when they talk, they don't really say anything. It's just about how you deliver it. Look at every Hulk Hogan promo ever.
Jimmy Snuka.
Oh, exactly. When you're watching a pro wrestler speak, you're not dissecting the message that's coming out of it, really. You're just there to see, feel the intensity of a guy.
The editing here back and forth, great for what they were trying to do, but just make this look... It made this guy just look like a complete idiot. They went back and forth with the Warrior and Chris Jericho. And then Ric Flair talks about how Ric Flair was interviewed for this and just had no time for this bullshit. He just flat out said he can't remember a single interview or anything of merit this guy ever said in his career. And then, for me, the highlight of this segment was all of a sudden the music got really eerie and somber.
I remember the one for WrestleMania 6 where he told Hulk Hogan that he would take control of Hogan's plane and take the plane into a nosedive.
As you, Hulk Hogan, travel to WrestleMania, tear down the cockpit door. Hogan, take the two pilots that have already made the sacrifice. Assume the controls. Hogan, shove that control into a nosedive, Hulk Hogan. And you will soon be close to parts unknown.
The music here was really, really good, and Christian was a grand slam home run.
Christian knew this
promo. Holy shit.
Word for word.
And they just went back and forth between Warrior and Christian, with Christian even doing the snort at the end.
Yeah.
This was awesome. Just fucking fantastic. To the point that at the end of this segment, I cannot even imagine Ultimate Warrior doing a normal speaking promo. I cannot even fathom it.
Yeah. No, you can't.
Can you imagine if they just changed his character one day? Like, if he was in today's WWE and had to do a scripted promo and couldn't yell,
because
yelling is TV-14.
Yeah. No, I can't really imagine it. And it's part of the character. It's just this wild man who just screams about crazy, crazy shit. Like,
you have to wonder what...
You can't script something like him.
Like, he had to... I don't know what would be the source of some of this stuff. Like, it's just so fucked up.
It is.
He had to be on shit.
It is.
Like, I don't think... It's like when Joe Rogan will go off on shit online. Like, you know the guy's just, like, not all there.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I got here. And Edge just ends the segment, stating that he thought the tassels were a little too tight and cut off the oxygen to his head.
He's a unique performer, that's for sure.
At this point, I was like, okay, I get it. But there was another hour left of this.
Yeah.
So then we go on to his program with Rick Rude, who, holy fuck, Scott Putski.
Well, I mean...
This guy made Scott Putski look clean.
Okay, but you're watching an Ultimate Warrior.
I know.
A Jim Helwig DVD. And DiBiase even goes on to contrast the Ultimate Warrior and Rick Rude, and he says Rick Rude was smaller than the Ultimate Warrior, but he had a lot more charisma.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you can say Ultimate Warrior did not have charisma. I think that was what carried him.
Yes, that's true.
That guy couldn't project whatever he was saying. He wouldn't have had the career. I think Ultimate Warrior had tons of charisma.
Charisma, yes. But maybe DiBiase meant versatility. Because, I mean, with Rick Rude, at least you can have a conversation, you know? You can have a coffee with Rick Rude, but
I'd love to have a coffee with Ultimate Warrior. That'd be awesome. The only times over the years I've emailed him trying to get him on the show.
Have you?
Never
heard a response.
Nope. DiBiase says he had the bodybuilder look, you're right, on a smaller scale. I'm like, if that's the smaller scale, wow.
It was the 80s.
Yeah. Then we went into the Andre the Giant feud, including a promo where Andre was wearing Warrior's face paint, which looked very weird. Ross puts over this feud as establishing the Warrior as a house show draw and really established Warrior as a top main event star. And they quickly made it clear that Andre hated this guy and this program, which Heenan reiterated. telling a story of Andre being pissed at Warrior, fucking up a spot three nights in a row, and then leaving him, and then punching him right in the face.
A great story.
With a fist. Oh, Bobby Heenan tells us, it's just great, where on night four, Warrior just dove into Andre, and Andre put his fist up, and Warrior just went out cold. DiBiase, who really, really hated this guy, said he felt sick, like sick to his stomach about this program, because he knew Warrior didn't appreciate what Andre was doing for him. And we'll hear from Ted DiBiase a little later on in this show, in case you were lukewarm about DiBiase's thoughts towards the Ultimate Warrior. We then go to the Royal Rumble 1990, and Hogan and Warrior are left together before the Barbarian and Rude come in next, and it leads to Hogan accidentally eliminating the Warrior, and Hogan won the Rumble, eliminating Mr. Perfect, and this set up WrestleMania 6 at the Sky Dome.
I really enjoyed this portion, too, because they didn't use any interview clips. They just used footage and then promos, Lord Alfred Hayes, Jack Tunney, Gene Oakland to tell this story. I thought it was really cool.
This match, at the time, like, was thought to be just, this is going to be horrible. But I think a lot of credit here goes to Pat Patterson, who likely laid this match out and was received very well in 1990. And the most interesting part here was Vince McMahon being interviewed saying it was intriguing because someone had to win and someone had to lose. Fascinating concept.
Well, I know what he means.
I know exactly what he means. I wish he would watch this DVD and maybe learn something from that. Imagine that, where you put two guys against each other, where you don't know who's going to win and who's going to lose. You feel both are unbeatable. Does that create an interesting dynamic.
That would be incredible.
There's this promotion that does very well on pay-per-view that is built on that foundation.
Do they have a winner for every match?
You know what? 98% of their fights end clean. Yeah.
Whoa.
And I can't even remember the last time there was a run-in. And people don't get bored with it. I'm shocked. Just a very well-laid-out match here. I haven't watched this match in years, but I really like the spot where Warrior goes for the finish and then Hulk hulks up, where you think it's going to be the finish like every other Hulk match. And goddamn, did you hate that finish if you were a regular WWF fan. And this was the first time Hulk failed with that Hulk up spot. And Warrior got the title. Brawler discusses the match outcome like it was a shoot and that Warrior beat Hogan in his prime. I guess I kind of understand maybe where he was coming from, but knowing that this is Steve Lombardi, I do believe he was trying to describe this as a shoot fight, which maybe Vince was learning from the UFC before UFC was even around. Maybe it was a shoot at WrestleMania 6 way.
It's always very interesting to see how protective they still are about the business, the WWE. You know, like on TV at least, they go to great lengths to protect kayfabe still to this day. Yet on these DVDs that they promote on those on Raw and on SmackDown, they just kind of pretty much go full out, tell you everything.
You know what was the weirdest DVD was when they did the Four Horsemen documentary a few years ago, and they interviewed all the guys. This is a WWE production, and Arn Anderson would not break kayfabe, which was shocking because a few years prior to that, Dan Lavransky did a 45-minute interview with Arn Anderson, completely open.
Shocked me
in that DVD that Anderson, like, if he's going to kayfabe someone, probably be us.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
You'd figure at least a producer or something would have told him, hey, Arn, you know, everybody else is kind of... You know.
Only in this industry. Like, even to this day, there's times I go to do an interview, and before it starts, they'll ask me, do you want me in character or not? Don't ever want you guys in character. Unless it was Warrior. Warrior I would interview in character. That would be fun, I think.
You wouldn't want Evan Bourne in character?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Worst interview of my life. Remember when you worked for Ring of Honor?
I'm going to do my best here and hopefully get to the top in the WWE.
In front of the universe. Yep. I then threw myself down Niagara Falls. Let's go back to this, the self-destruction of the Ultimate Warrior. Brawler and Jericho talk about Hogan passing the torch. I hate this term, passing the torch. I just don't want to ever hear it again.
Why?
I don't know what it even means.
Means
when have we ever seen this mythical torch passed. When have we ever seen a guy lose and he's done after that? And a new star
is... McFoley, Triple H.
Okay. I hear that term so much, and it's... I heard it first in wrestling, and now I hear it everywhere. In sports, in fucking movies.
Yeah.
I just hate this term.
Randy Couture, Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, that was a passing of the torch. See, in UFC, it's a forced passing of the torch. It's the taking of the torch.
Yeah. I don't know.
20 years later, has Hogan passed the torch, really?
No, he has not.
I always...
The torch to The Rock again.
At the Skydome matches with Warrior and Rock. He theoretically passed the torch. And in both cases, was Hogan not more popular after that loss than before?
Yeah.
That WrestleMania 6 match, to me, everyone looks back at that as the night Hogan finally lost, rather than the night Warrior won the title.
Samoa Joe, Austin Aries. Samoa Joe passed the torch.
I guess he was never really in a main event role in that company for the next year while he was working. He still worked there for another year.
Yeah. It works when it works, when it's done properly. But, I don't know. I'm sorry. It's tough to... I keep wanting to avoid
unfair
criticisms of the WWF.
Yeah.
But it can work. It really can work, the passing of the torch.
Hogan says when he lost the match and everyone was watching him leaving rather than Warrior in the ring, that he knew they made a mistake. Then Brawler says in the years after the Hogan win that Warrior matured, he became a better wrestler, and he became the total package. Now, this is all well and good, but Warrior did not remain around the WWF for years to come, as Warrior describes here, and I don't know when the Warrior became the total package, unless that was a body reference to Lex Luger and his look. We then see a promo by Warrior on DiBiase, and he yells that money doesn't buy biceps.
Mm-hmm.
And I disagree.
Steroids build biceps.
We see a clip of Warrior against DiBiase with Virgil running in. I just know that this was a real shitty finish to a match. And Randy Savage then ran in, and this started their program, Warrior and Savage, which would eventually lead to WrestleMania 7. And Lawler just flat out makes fun of both Savage and Warrior, two guys who were fucking crazy.
Yeah, neither guy comes off too flattering here. They basically treat it as a feud between two psychos, and they cut clips between the two of them, and then Slaughter even says they were two peas in a pod, nobody understood either of them, so they were perfect for each other.
It led to the Royal Rumble in 1991, where Savage cost Warrior the WWF title, which... logically, and they did preface this by saying Savage was nuts, but if you were lining up for a match with the Ultimate Warrior, why would you cost him the WWF title before your match with him?
Because you hate him that much, your hatred for the guy.
That you would give up becoming... Why wouldn't you leave the title on him so that you could beat him and take the title at the same time?
Because there's a guaranteed rematch clause for the champion who loses the title.
Oh, okay. Then we fast forward to SummerSlam 1991 way, and Slaughter says the Warrior held up Vince for more money before the show. Hogan suggested to McMahon that since Warrior's going to be in a match with the Iron Sheik, let's have the Sheik shoot on him and break his leg.
Yeah.
In 1991, that was their solution. Let's break his legs.
Let's break his leg.
On the DVD, Vince agreed to the money, so the main event went out.
What was the actual...
it's an interesting story.
Dispute here.
Because it really is a complete fabrication, and I'm going to find it here. Fast forwarding to the 1991 moment, it implied this happened right before the match, where McMahon, and everyone, I am quoting the Wrestling Observer newsletter, so before everyone gets on me for infringement here, I'm encouraging everyone to go purchase the October 10th, 2005 edition. It's implied this happened right before the match, where McMahon, having advertised a main event, had no choice as a proverbial gun was put to his head. In reality, on July 13, 1991, McMahon and Helwig agreed to a notation addendum to his existing contract. In the agreement, McMahon agreed to pay Helwig $550,000 for his match at the previous WrestleMania, perhaps the best match of his career, where he worked with Savage in a loser-must-retire match. keep in mind in the blah, 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 blah. Okay, this is really, really long. Okay, theoretically, 6 weeks before the match, mm-hmm. Warrior and McMahon had negotiated a new term to his contract where he would work X amount of dates, he would be paid the most of anyone on any house shows, and he was going to get a fee, a significant payoff for the WrestleMania match. And from what I gather here is that before the match at SummerSlam was when Warrior wanted his money, and that led to all of this. But it was all agreed to 6 weeks before. Vince McMahon signed a contract insuring him this money. So it's not as black and white as Warrior simply showed up one day before a pay-per-view and said, pay me this money or I'm not wrestling tonight.
Hmm.
So in this case, I think Warrior is somewhat misrepresented.
Somewhat.
Somewhat.
Yeah.
The match at SummerSlam ended with Hogan pinning Slaughter after Warrior ran to the back and Vince McMahon fired him.
And then
everyone just shits on him.
Yeah, they go to a segment where you have DiBiase, Hogan, everybody saying how pissed off they were with this guy who was not a team player. They go on about how they've all felt they weren't making enough money at some point in their careers, but they never, ever did what the Ultimate Warrior did.
Hogan bashes him. Okerlund bashes him. Vince says, I couldn't wait to fire him. But once again, the guy who takes the cake, the quiet assassin in this documentary, Ted DiBiase, compares this situation to a homeless man being taken in and given a feast and then turning on the people who took him into their home. Overly dramatic. That was somewhat.
That was good. My favorite insult came just slightly before this. It was Sergeant Slaughter on working with the Ultimate Warrior. He says, Warrior is like a wild horse. You just grab it and learn to ride it. That's when it'll listen to you.
This man was just an animal.
Yeah.
An animal who was homeless.
Yeah.
So he was fired in August of 91. WrestleMania 8 came around and Hogan was leaving, so Warrior was brought back at WrestleMania 8. And I will say, this is one of my first memories of pro wrestling, was WrestleMania 8. And I had heard of who the Ultimate Warrior was, but I'd never seen him. And I knew this was a big deal at WrestleMania 8 when Ultimate Warrior returned.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Pritchard says that when he came back, Warrior's hair was shorter and he wasn't in the gym as much. Now, this was quite the insult. The WWF, since Warrior had left, had instituted drug testing. So yes, the Ultimate Warrior was smaller. But if you looked at the Ultimate Warrior here during his return, he was bigger than like 80% of the current roster.
Mm-hmm.
But they decided to point out that he was small. Not as dedicated in the gym. Fuck.
I don't remember this. I never watched until about 1991 or so. But he was wearing a jumpsuit with muscles painted on.
That was the WWE worried about his look.
So they put on a jumpsuit.
A muscle suit like Giant Gonzalez used to wear.
That's so weird.
Yeah, very strange. This was when they talked to some guys about the rumor that Ultimate Warrior had died.
Yeah. DiBiase portrays Vince McMahon here as the guardian angel. The great thing about Vince McMahon is his ability to give somebody a second chance.
He's great.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't Hogan about to leave during this time?
Hogan did leave.
Hogan did leave to shoot movies, correct?
He left because this was in the middle of that whole steroid scandal,
mm-hmm.
and Hogan had to get himself off TV. So after WrestleMania 8, he left for a year, and he was working. Yeah, I think he was doing that movies and Thunder in Paradise, and then it was 93. He might have done some Japan dates in 92. He definitely did in 93.
Okay.
And at this point, Ultimate Warrior started a program with Papa Shango. And I don't care how many people shit on this angle. When I was 8 years old, mm-hmm. I was totally compelled by this. I thought it was crazy.
Yeah.
I think, dictates your acceptance of certain angles within wrestling. I was 8 at the time, and when I saw that goo shit come from Warrior's head, I'm like, wow, Papa Shango's getting to this guy.
Yeah, I still think it's cool. I still think it's a pretty cool effect.
I still don't know how they did it.
Yeah, I don't either. Well,
like, they had to have had, like, capsules and shit, but, like,
something like that.
But it was well done. Any angle where you have to give it some thought. And then he had the appendicitis, and he vomited on all these. I posted this actually on the Review Away Facebook group this week. When I saw that angle, I was just, I didn't know what the fuck to make about it. And then all my friends at school told me that he vomited on one of the doctors, and they died as a result of the vomit. And I believed it. I'm like, wow. And I had this paranoia of ever getting vomited on after this.
Oh, my God.
8 years old, folks. It's a great time to be gullible.
You have some mean classmates.
So we're watching all this insanity. Warrior and Papa Shango, and they go to Jim Ross. Yeah. And I just sat back. I'm like, give me some gold, Jim Ross. And he just simply says, this was not an artistic success, as they show Warrior vomiting on personnel during an angle.
Yeah. I suppose it grossed a lot of people out. Maybe that's why it was...
Then they show Warrior and Papa Shango wrestling in the ring. They cut to Gene Okerlund just pinching his nose. Brawler questioned Warrior's love for the industry as opposed to the money and fame. This coming after Brawler stated that he was becoming a better wrestler after the Hogan match and became the total package. That then leads to Warrior's next exit from the company in October of 1992, which they pretty much just skim over, and Vince McMahon says it was a drug
policy violation.
Yes. And the story here was that they were very, very serious about drug testing at this time in the wake of the scandal, and they had reason to believe that Warrior and Davey Boy Smith were buying human growth hormone from England.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, they were both fired, and Bulldog went to WCW, and Warrior just did nothing.
Yeah, and Warrior, I read in some interviews afterwards, he claims that he has tests from this period indicating that he was not on steroids and that he and Bulldog were only fired as scapegoats.
Well, the story I've heard is that they were buying human growth hormone, which if that's the case, there's no way you can test for human growth hormone. So I don't doubt, maybe there probably are test results that he tested negative for steroids, but that wouldn't mean he'd be clean of human growth hormone. Mm, I mean, you still can't test for it today unless you test within like a day of injecting it.
I like the way they handled this portion on the DVD. They basically had Vince say Warrior had a drug policy violation, and then they simply dipped to black.
Yes.
Dipped to black.
Could have ended here. Could have thought he died. They then go over his name change, where he legally changed his name to Warrior. Everyone just thought he was crazy. Hogan was really trying to be diplomatic throughout this DVD. Think of the back of the head, he was thinking, maybe I'll have one more shot with this guy, and I don't want to fuck things up with this DVD.
Yeah, maybe I'll have to hire this guy to join my own company.
So. Yeah.
And then Vince said it didn't matter in terms of intellectual property anyway, whether he changed his name or not.
Well, turned out, we'll go over that later in the lawsuit. We fast forward to 1996. We just skip over 4 years.
Oh, he didn't have a funny line here. He said, maybe I should have changed my name to Weasel.
Yes. Huh. 1996 comes around, and he returns once again looking massive. And coincidentally, it was when Warrior returned to the company that they stopped drug testing. Amazing how stuff like that works.
I remember his return in 1996. It was just so...
I had no interest. I would have been 12 at the time, and I had no interest in him. Because at this point, I had been watching like Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and...
Diesel, Razor.
I might have been young, but I wasn't dumb enough to know that Ultimate Warrior was not a wrestler in that sense. And I think after watching Bret and Shawn and even Kurt Hennigan there, it's like you did have an understanding of work rate and the difference from the prior guys on top.
He just seemed so out of place, especially with the WWE promoting their new generation. And, you know, the whole marketing at that time was how we're not the 80s anymore. We're not these old-timers on our roster.
Like, imagine a company that was not doing well financially, was having a real difficult time drawing on pay-per-view and television, and you have this core nucleus of guys, but instead of pushing them, you're going back to what worked 10 years ago.
What?
I mean, who would do something like that?
What the fuck? That's fucked up.
Man, like, so glad promotions today have learned from that. Because that's just backwards booking.
That would be a nightmare. I'm glad I don't live in a world like that.
Yes. Yes. So WrestleMania 12, Way, and Ultimate Warrior. Just let's not. I don't want to get anyone wrong here. I fully believe that the Ultimate Warrior was an asshole to deal with. Like, mm-hmm. some of the stories, and when you read the Observer story, some of you might think he was even a bigger asshole with some of the stories that did not make this DVD. And he goes into WrestleMania 12 with just this unknown mid-carder named Triple H. And Triple H knows he's putting Warrior over, knows he's the bigger star, and Hunter wants to have a competitive match and at least look good in losing. And Warrior basically told him, kid, shut the fuck up. This is what we're doing. It's going to be 90 seconds, and I'm going to be on offense for the full 90 seconds. Go away. And that's how this match went out.
That's what happened.
And little did we know what Triple H would become in this industry. And pretty much to me guarantees that Ultimate Warrior, well, he still did get the call for the Hall of Fame this year. So I won't say that he's been excommunicated from the industry. But my God, talk about, you know, being nice to guys on the way up that are just, this was just poetic justice, I find, that Ultimate Warrior treated this guy like shit, who went on to become probably the most powerful performer in the industry.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. They played the whole match, which was surprising. You'd figure that, you know, with Triple H in the position he is, that they would try to bury this in history and not make mention of it again. But you, at the end, you definitely do sympathize with Hunter and his treatment.
Oh, I would have been pissed. Then they go to a storyline they did after WrestleMania involving the Warrior and Jerry the King Lawler. And they were going to do a segment where Lawler had one of Warrior's comic books framed in glass. And Warrior was going to take this portrait over the head. And Warrior decided to wear a baseball cap instead. And I understand there are lots of things in this DVD that I disagree with, but everyone's going to give me shit about this. About unprotected shots to the head. So, I guess the Ultimate Warrior was just being cautious, knowing the dangers of blows to the head.
So the baseball cap was
He did the Gary Coleman trick. Remember when he was in WCW? And he put, like, he wore a baseball hat when Jarrett was going to clock him with the guitar.
To protect your head?
I don't know why. Is a baseball hat going to do much?
A baseball hat wouldn't do anything.
Well, Warrior thought it would. So, Ross described, sorry, Lawler just commented here thinking that the baseball cap ruined the angle.
Yeah.
I don't think it made a difference either
way.
I barely remember this. Then we go on to Ross describing Warrior no-showing events. And this was a very interesting little situation because apparently the Warrior, he wanted to renegotiate his deal and said he wasn't going to show up at events if he didn't get that. And this led to Warrior not showing up for a set of events. And then legitimately, his father died during this time where he was skipping events. But apparently, the Warrior and his father were never close. They hadn't seen each other since he was a little kid. And the WWE basically thought that that was a lame excuse to use for missing shows for your father, who you weren't close to. But you can agree or disagree with that at all. And they talk about, when you're advertised, it's a no-no in the business. And Vince brings up that he clarifies that Warrior and his father were not close, and this led to his final termination with the company. Now, if you watch closely on the DVD, Way, they show different posters of the Ultimate Warrior being advertised. And there's dates on these posters which don't correspond with the dates that Warrior was still under contract with the WWE. In fact, on one poster, he's listed as WWF Champion Ultimate Warrior, which he never was at this time. And on another poster, Psycho Sid is listed in the mid-card, which, when Warrior left, they brought Sid in to replace him.
So what are you saying? These posters were from the early 90s or 80s?
I'm saying these posters were
fabricated,
photoshopped.
No.
Afraid so.
Are you serious?
Yeah, really? I'm totally serious.
They would just make up some design to use for this DVD?
They just wanted to emphasize their point. I mean, the guy missed shows that he was advertised for.
Yeah.
I don't know why they just wouldn't use the actual posters with the right dates on them and the right... This one, they just inserted, I think they took his picture and put it over top Shawn Michaels, who was advertised as the main event, and they forgot to take out WWF Champion.
Really? I'll have to rewatch that. It's hard for me to believe that they'll go to that length, but I'll have to rewatch that.
Apparently so. Then they had Gorilla Monsoon suspending Warrior on TV and saying that he would have to put up a $250,000 performance bond if he wanted to work for them. And then the Warrior sued the WWE for $6 million to get the rights to his name. And they interview Ric Flair here, who says that he didn't know that Warrior sued the company until he was told right there in this interview. And he's disgusted at this man. Disgusted at Warrior. Then we go to the WCW days, and at this point, Hogan and Bischoff are there, and Hogan admits to coming up with a, quote, scam with Jimmy Hart to bring in a wrestler named The Renegade, real name Rick Williams, as basically an imposter of the Ultimate Warrior, named The Renegade, who actually died in February of 99.
Yeah. They teased it as
by suicide.
Yes. They teased it as their ultimate surprise.
Is that what they called it? The ultimate surprise. Oh, they should have been sued. Then Warrior finally did come into the company 3 years later in August of 1998. And it all built to this Monday Nitro in Hartford, Connecticut, where Hogan was in the ring and the Ultimate Warrior showed up in a segment where Warrior was supposed to talk for 6 minutes and instead talked for 18 minutes on live TV. Now, they do go to Okerlund, who talked about ratings tanking during this segment. In fact, the exact opposite occurred, where ratings shot up and actually doubled the quarter hour for Raw at the time.
Oh, wow.
So,
see, that I didn't
know. That one is courtesy of Dave Meltzer. And Hogan was just pissed here during this promo, because apparently, going into this promo, Warrior was never supposed to bring up the fact that he beat Hogan at WrestleMania 6. Which, if that was the case, why the fuck are you bringing in the Ultimate Warrior?
Yeah, why are you doing this angle? Is this not supposed to be a rematch?
Why would anyone care? 6 years later? Why should this guy have a match with Hogan?
Mm-hmm. I'm amazed that he thinks people don't remember that themselves.
And it's just so flawed that you're bringing in the babyface to lose. Like, the heel here is going to avenge a loss. So backwards.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really get that reasoning.
And Bischoff and Hogan maintain on this DVD that Warrior was not brought in just for Hogan to get his win back. But I don't know how much better you could construe this. This was just, he was brought in, I think he signed a very short-term contract, and then he left after Halloween Havoc. He'd made one more appearance after that pay-per-view, and that was it. And it was an absolutely horrible match, which you can go back into our archives and listen to. It was our review of Halloween Havoc 1998.
September 20th.
Oh, that was one of our first reviews.
Yeah, it was our second one, actually.
So, go back. It's a horrid match.
And Hogan, Bischoff and Hogan agree that it was one of the worst matches ever. Hogan takes full blame for the fireball messing up. He calls it his harebrained idea.
Yeah, he said all the hair on his mustache and beard were all burnt off his face and his eyebrows, which I don't recall occurring, but the flash paper did go off in his face. Just a terrible match and a terrible finish, with Horace hitting Warrior with a chair as Bischoff distracted the referee and Hogan got the win. And then Warrior left WCW shortly after that.
Because apparently he asked for too much money during his renegotiation.
Okay.
That's what they said.
Then they do a little catch-up with what Warrior is doing today. Oakland says he's shocked that he's speaking at colleges. Ross says that he would love to attend one of these college seminars that Warrior has been giving out. There's actually a story a few years back during one of these college seminars that Warrior gave, where he ended up calling a Muslim student, I believe, and referred to him as Towelhead.
Wow.
This is like a professional speaker coming to speak at your college. Such an embarrassment.
Wasn't there another one where he started insulting gays? There's like a gay student, you know.
Oh, he always goes off on homosexuals in his rants.
What does he do now? Is he some sort of politician or some sort of
I'm pretty sure he's done stuff on Fox News before. Like, he's ultra right wing. Like, insane. Like, politics and Jim Helwig equal just gold.
Incredible.
Heenan just sums up everything. No one liked him. Flair gets up and walks away from the interview when asked if he thinks he was a flash in the pan. Jericho was clearly a Warrior fan and says he was underrated and he did have the ability to have a great match when necessary.
Yeah, and I think for Jericho, he probably comes from the mindset that you should respect your elders no matter what.
Especially for, you know, Christian Edge and Jericho all came across like that in this DVD where, yes, this guy was weird, but this guy was a big part of their childhoods.
Exactly.
And
yes.
Are not just going to shit on this guy as pretty much let all the co-workers and colleagues who actually worked with him do that. Mm-hmm. And then the DVD ends with, Ultimate Warrior is the trademark of Ultimate Creations Incorporated.
Ultimate what?
There's a black screen as they fade to black, and the words Ultimate Warrior is the trademark of Ultimate Creations Inc. coming up, which tells you that the Warrior did retain the rights to his name.
Ultimate Creations.
And that was how he got to go to WCW under the name Ultimate Warrior.
Hold on, but then how would the Ultimate Warrior allow for his name to be used on this DVD?
Maybe it was just one big courtesy. I don't know. I am learning firsthand, Way, that these things are very tricky situations.
Yeah. Yeah,
so there was a big lawsuit over this DVD, and then there was a big lawsuit between these two companies prior to this DVD where the settlement was that neither could speak ill of the other. So WWE came out with this DVD.
What?
And then I believe there was another lawsuit stemming from this. And it all led to this past year where the Ultimate Warrior was invited to be the main inductee into the 2010 Hall of Fame. And he wanted Vince to publicly apologize on the air for the DVD. Vince did not do that. Warrior ended up not coming to the Hall of Fame, and they weren't able to put anything together. And
wow, that, shocker!
It was in Phoenix this past year where Warrior lives, and I'm sure as you look down at like each year for the Hall of Fame, there aren't a ton of major names left out there that are not with TNA, and I'm sure Warrior's going to get the phone call every year to come into the Hall of Fame, and I bet he'll eventually do it.
I think so.
It's wrestling.
I think so too, but the moment he sees this DVD again, he'll probably reconsider.
I don't know how you could watch this if you're the Ultimate Warrior and ever want to do business for these guys and generate money for them. Not that the Ultimate Warrior is some glowing example of professionalism in this industry.
No. But you could say that about so many guys.
Yeah. I think a lot of the anger towards Warrior from guys in the industry come from the fact that this guy made so much money in the industry, which I am never going to fault a guy who got in there. I don't care what your ability was. If you could get that money out of them, then good for them.
Yeah, yeah. So the company made a lot of money from
they did.
This character.
So, this past year's Hall of Fame, the main entrant into the Hall of Fame was Ted DiBiase, who was all over this DVD. Earlier this year, Dan the Mouth Lavransky spoke with Ted DiBiase, and it was DiBiase who himself brought up the Ultimate Warrior and the story about him almost going into the Hall of Fame. So, here is Ted DiBiase describing the chance that the Ultimate Warrior could have been going into the Hall of Fame alongside the Million Dollar Man.
You know, there was a big story in one of the online papers or something about... Because I made the comment that when Ultimate Warrior turned it down, there's one guy who, obviously, you know, he was made a champion, but you know, in my opinion, you know, the guy is just—he's one of those guys, and it's just not me. It would be different if I was, you know, like the only guy who saw it this way.
Sure,
but you know, it's kind of like. His unwillingness to be inducted was based on wanting an apology from Vince for the DVD.
That's right.
The DVD was basically, okay, we're gonna put you out here, and I was part of this process. No, I didn't know who else was going to be interviewed. I mean, they called. They said, "Would you come in?" And we're putting together this DVD on the Ultimate Warrior. Would you be willing to come in and talk about, you know, your matches and your and what you think? And I said, "Sure." Well, this was all done. It wasn't like we all sat down at a table together and said, "Okay, we're gonna trash the Warrior." these were all individual guys in the business who came in one at a time on separate days and were sat down in front of the camera, and they all said the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, you know, what I would say to Jim Helwig is, look, or, you know, you think we're all stupid? There must be something wrong with all of us then if we all have it wrong and you think you have it right. Here's the thing. I grew up in this industry, and I've loved it all my life. And there are a lot of guys who have made it big, who haven't necessarily been tremendously talented, that have been, you know, and I think I said this, it's kind of like, I'll give you an example. Junkyard Dog was a tremendous entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
He had so much character, so much charisma. But in the ring, he really wasn't that good.
Right.
You know, there was a few things that he could do well. And as a worker, I could work around that. And I could pull out the best of what JYD could do, and we could have a great match, you know. But the thing about Dog was he appreciated it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he would tell you, "Thanks, man," and you know, and that I think the biggest beef that everybody has with Jim is you don't appreciate anybody,
right?
You know, it's almost like you're the warrior and you think you got yourself there. You know, the only thing that I would give Jim Helwig tremendous credit for is the unbelievable discipline he had in taking care of his body.
Right.
You know, I mean, that, you know, that you know, I take my hat off to him for. But there are so many people who got in that ring with him to help him, you know, have a good match. And I'll say it again. Jim's matches were only as good as whoever got in the ring with him and let him, because on his own, he couldn't do that. And you know what the proof of that is? Did you see his comeback?
Yeah, yes, yes.
I mean, it's kind of like, it's awful.
Yeah.
And that's why it's awful, is because he doesn't really know how to. He never became a student of the business.
Right.
It was a means to an end. And, you know, so, you know, again, I mean, I'm not sure there are a lot of Ultimate Warrior fans out there who you know, want to disagree with me, and that's fine. Again, you know, Jim's a guy who Vince took advantage of what he had, and that's what Vince does.
Yeah.
That's why Vince is a great promoter. Vince, here's the difference between Vince McMahon and Eric Bischoff. Vince knows how to create a star.
Wow, fascinating. Yes, very insightful way. And I also was able to go back into some of our archives. And in September of 2008, I was interviewing Chris Masters, who is now a member of the WWE. And he was part of the New Evolution overseas tours that were going on. And in particular, in 2008, the Ultimate Warrior did one of these tours. And I asked Chris about his interaction with the Ultimate Warrior, who he gave a brand new nickname to.
I know you've also been working with a new wrestling evolution over there in Europe, and some of the crowds for these shows have just been huge. And I'm curious, were you there for the Ultimate Warrior's big return match back in June?
Yes, I was. And boy, can I tell you, that was definitely, I've never experienced something like that in my life. That guy's reputation definitely precedes me. He's now in my book and many others. Well, you know what? We had a nickname for him. It was the Ultimate Asshole. The guy, that guy still wants the red carpet rolled out for him. He's 50 years old. He blew up in 2 minutes in his match with Orlando. I mean, NWE's doing some great things, and I signed a year contract with them. And, you know, I'm really happy with kind of the business we did over the summer. But the Ultimate Warrior was strictly, you know, kind of for buzz. I mean, that guy was unbelievable. I mean, and when I say that, I do not mean in a good way.
Well, it sounded like just a huge clusterfuck at the end, where it was to crown a NWE champion, Ultimate Warrior goes over and then just vacates the title. So it really does nothing for the guys that have to stay around there. And definitely Ultimate Warrior is a guy, you know, he's in the business for one person.
Oh, yes, exactly. And, you know, the guy, he didn't say hi to... He came out, it was in May, he came out the first time, I believe, and he came out to set up the angle. He gave this big speech talking about how he's there for the young guys and anybody who wants to talk to him and blah, 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 you know, being real nice. He really worked everybody, because then next time we saw him was in Barcelona for the big show, That guy did not give one person 1 second of his time. Nor did he say hi. He went straight to his own locker room and didn't say bye to his soul after he stunk up the whole joint and we had to all go out there and do a schmoz with all the baby faces and heels because, it was freaking saved the town.
Wow. The ultimate asshole, officially dubbed here on Fight Network Radio by Chris Masters.
Glowing reaction to the Ultimate Warrior courtesy of Chris Masters and Ted DiBiase. And that brings us over to our feedback section, Wei. And as usual, we have quite a lot of feedback to get to here.
What do you give that DVD, John?
I was entertained for about half of it. I thought it was way too long. I didn't need it to be that long of the burial portion of it. I mean, it was not balanced at all. Though, I thought the Christian part with the WrestleMania 6 promo was probably the highlight. Jim Ross was very entertaining in it. I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty low. I found it like a comedy roast. Without the guy invited to respond. So, I mean, anytime you're making fun of something, it's going to be entertaining. So I found this DVD highly entertaining, and actually would be one that I'd be willing to purchase and spend my money on. So I give it a 8.5 out of 10.
Do you think we'll ever see another DVD like this put out by the WWE?
Well, who are the candidates?
Bill Goldberg? They put out a Savage DVD, and it was just all his matches and stuff, and they didn't bury him.
Bill Goldberg, they're not on terrible terms, are they, with Bill Goldberg?
They're not on terrible terms, but you never know. They would get crucified if they put out, like, a Bruno disc.
Yeah.
It's any guy that they want to bring in that they can't.
Huh.
Like, if they were UFC, they would put out the self-destruction of Fedor Emelianenko. Never know. UFC did that burial piece, remember? Building up the Dana-Tito boxing fight?
Yeah, that's right.
Totally buried Tito,
mm-hmm.
who has never been the same level of draw since that thing aired.
I wouldn't point to that. That show.
A lot of people saw that. That aired on Spike.
But it's because Tito
played it.
But it's for me, it was because Tito is no longer winning, no longer as competitive as he used to be.
I think that has a large part to do with it. But I think when he first came back following that leave of absence from the UFC, he wasn't the same. Like him and Forrest Griffin, I thought. That first fight coming back would at least have some interest because of the first fight.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, that showed it very low business.
Well, like the Ultimate Warrior, I feel Tito's hiatus really disrupted his
momentum. There's a lot of parallels between Tito Ortiz and the Ultimate Warrior to their respective professions.
Sure.
In terms of
the self-destruction of Tito Ortiz.
All right, let's get into this.
Yeah. Andrew Patterson says, guys, to solve your mystery, Daniel Power is one of the two, count them two, Facebook friends I've gained by being mentioned on your show.
That's fantastic when we can bring listeners together on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Steven Jensen writes, I have to say that John and Wei talking about Daniel Power was freaking hilarious. Power Danielson. Ha 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 ha.
Scott McCullough, just want to say great job by everyone on the feedback this week. Keep it up and let everybody know about RAW. Also, don't forget to post your comments regarding the Ultimate Warrior DVD, or hell, even post your thoughts on the Ultimate Warrior himself and how crazy fucked up he is.
Brian Hillhouse, I hate the Ultimate Warrior. I never, ever liked him. I remember being excited, thinking he was going to leave the WWF forever in 1990 because I thought he was the Black Scorpion. I hate him so much that I'll believe anything negative the WWE says about him. If they said he liked to have his opponent shit in his mouth backstage before their match, I would consider it gospel truth. Hate him!
Hate him.
Wow, that's strong.
Wow, yeah. Andrew McMahon, I don't hate Warrior. I was a huge fan as a kid. Didn't understand his promos, didn't really care. At the end of the day, he was going to shake some ropes and kick ass.
Brian Hillhouse, he just didn't do it for me. I was never able to put my finger on it until he beat Hogan at WrestleMania 6, and I sat in the upper deck, and that was the final straw.
Andrew McMahon again. The match on South Park at the beginning of the episode was Cena and Maria versus Edge and Lita. They pretty much drew Maria as she appeared in the match.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Padrej Flood writes, you may want to stop fixating on the members figure going down by one every now and then. I deactivate my count whenever I've something important to do because I can't reactivate it on my phone. That'd remove me from the total each time, adding me back on when I reactivate. In fact, you might even notice this post disappearing a few times over the week and then reappearing when I reactivate. You've got to do a WWF pay-per-view from 2000. The few I watched recently weren't as good as I remembered.
Okay.
Thanks.
Is that reason enough for us to review?
I guess so.
Okay. Brendan West, last week's review was a nice change of pace. I thought the South Park review was great, but the other review was okay. You guys made it funny as always. Looking forward to the Ultimate Warrior DVD review. Keep up the great work.
Randy Goak, wanted to suggest maybe you guys go through and try and watch one of the old seasons of Tough Enough. I know a whole season seems like a lot, but all total, a season is about 4 hours long. It's cool to watch back on it and see who has made it and what has changed since then.
Who has made it?
From that first season?
Nobody.
Nowinski's out. Josh Matthews is the star that came out of season one.
He hasn't made it.
Was there anyone else in that?
Not Nydia.
Jackie Gator was second season. Yeah, they're all gone.
Yeah. Dale Perry, I'm loving the new show. However, for the GM thing, couldn't it just be JR? I mean, he's close to Stone Cold. He's always been an advocate for honor and dignity in wrestling. Besides, the GM seems to be a babyface. I think as of right now, he's the only one that can actually use that would fit. Besides, it explains him staying away from the ring because Jerry would obviously want to avoid yet another beatdown in the middle of a wrestling ring. Poor guy is almost at jobber status because of the beatdowns he's gotten over the years. I don't think the GM seems to be a babyface.
No, he just booked Cena in a 7-on-1 handicap match. Yeah. No, I think actually they, you know, connecting the dots and stuff coming off of Raw, it seems that they have made sense of it logically leading to the GM being the leader of Nexus.
Sure.
I think it almost has to be that right now.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, I'll have issues. Colin Oral writes, hey guys, I listened to your review of Raw today, and if you have the time, you should definitely make that a weekly review. I've listened to every review away since you started, and hopefully this will become a weekly review as well. And then he recites the lyrics from South Park. All I ever wanted was to be a wrestler.
You gotta sing it, John.
No, I'm not going to. He says, best promo ever.
You're disappointing.
I know.
Kaylin Baker, I was watching Impact at my parents' house last Thursday. My father, who hates wrestling, sat down for a minute to check it out. When Taz and Tanae came on the screen, he said, those guys are lowlives for calling this shit. I answered back with, wait till you see Michael Cole, and chuckled to myself. He gave me a I'm disappointed in you, son, glare. He then walked out of the room muttering some derogatory remark about wrestling. I thought the review away would find this amusing. Yes, your father sounds awesome.
Yeah. Those sounds guys like are low Winnebago lives. Man. Have you heard that there's a documentary on Winnebago Man coming out this weekend?
What is Winnebago Man?
You've never seen that clip on YouTube?
No.
It's this famous YouTube clip of this guy that has been called Winnebago Man, and he used to sell Winnebagos, and they would air these outtakes of him just yelling at production staff and shit, and now they found a connection. They've done a documentary on him. The man's real name is Jack Rebney, and he is the father of Bjorn Rebney, who runs Bellator.
Really?
Yeah. Go to MiddleEasy.com. They have the trailer up.
I love that site.
It's a great site.
My favorite MMA website.
MiddleEasy.
Yeah.
Okay, Sean Patterson. Fantastic. Can't wait to hear more weekly Raw reviews. Reminds me a lot of the Brian and Vinny Show reviews on F4W, which is definitely a good thing. Is it just going to be Raw, or do you guys plan on reviewing SmackDown as well? That would take a while and probably give you both a headache. Yeah, it would also mean we would have to do that on the weekend or something, and I am not coming here for any more days.
It would also mean I'd have to watch SmackDown.
That's true.
I don't think so.
I think if Cole is the mystery GM, then the email thing makes perfect sense. If not, why not just have Cole with a Bluetooth headset and interrupt on the mic when the GM has an announcement? The payoff for me would be Cole heading up to the podium, opening the laptop, chuckle, throw it on the ground, and order the Nexus guys to destroy Lawler. A guy can dream.
It's a Mac. Why would you want to do that to a Mac?
Yeah.
They're expensive. Sean Prasad. Great review on the Monday Night Raw show. After your discussion of chili on TLC... Oh, on Chili Ub TLC, I had to check out her Twitter page, and after reading some of her posts, I immediately pressed the follow button. Her tweets are hilarious. She's the definition of a true wrestling mark. If you guys are reviewing the Raw, I think we should have a segment of Chili tweets on Raw. Anyway, I was going to send Chili a message and tell her that I really enjoyed her insight on Raw, and I'm shocked the WWE hasn't approached her to be a special guest host.
This woman's going to get so many new followers.
Let's have a Chili segment.
Chili Twitter segment. Next week we will do the first ever. We need a name for it. Call it Chili McFreeze. I don't know.
What?
That was remember that was the old character they came up with for Steve Austin.
No.
Yeah, remember that?
Chili McFreeze?
It's in McFoley's book where it was, they wanted to make Austin. Austin came to them about this character who was menacing and ice. And this is how WWE Creative responded. They gave him names like, you know, something McCoolidge, Chili McFreeze was one of them.
Oh my God.
It's all these names for their ice cold character.
Chili McFreeze.
Yep. Sam Kennerly writes, the only part of the Ultimate Warrior documentary that I can remember was a bit where he mentions getting tied down and run over by lawnmowers. Very strange.
You know, I do not remember that. Rob King, the more I think about it, the more I want Jason and Dan to come in and each do a show with you as a guest reviewer. I think it would be really good if they both did a show with you every 6 months or so. Make it happen. Jason with his sarcastic humor I think would be especially good. July pay-per-views to review. In Your House, Canadian Stampede, Bash at the Beach 95, and that's it.
All right. We first have to raise funds to buy more microphones if we are to do something like that. Warren Bernier writes, was glad to hear you and Way review Raw this week. I, too, am one of those fans who enjoy listening to other fans bullshit about the silliness of pro wrestling. I have a review request, ECW Heatwave 98. It's actually a pretty damn good show if you like the ECW style, but I think it will be cool to see how many times John says unprotected chair shot during that review. Keep up the good work.
Artyom in Lithuania.
Hasn't written us for a while.
Artyom. I thought his name was Artis.
Is this Artis Ozolinch? Is it the same guy?
I don't know.
Okay. Could be two separate ones.
They're both from Lithuania?
RTM from Lithuania.
Okay. Sorry if you're not the same person. I object. I know your Raw podcast has some loyal pro wrestling fans who cringe at the thought of you doing MMA reviews, but don't you guys let those gelatinous tapeworms dictate what you can and cannot do. John, Way, you like MMA, I know that, so why the discrimination? I mean the MMA discrimination crime that took place last week. You reviewed South Park and What's-Its-Name episodes with a pro wrestling theme when you could do a wrestling sitcom episode and an MMA sitcom episode such as Friends from Season 3, Episode 24
wow.
with UFC. That episode, by the way, that gave Bruce Buffer his job with the company. And an episode of The Simpsons, Season 21, Episode 3, also with the UFC theme. I need my UFC. P.S. All complaining aside, keep up the good work. Though I still miss the days of Ask Away with the two of you and Jay who edit that extra flavor. That was delicious. Well, it still exists.
You can go bite.ca/radio.
Mm-hmm.
Do it every Sunday. Yeah, I don't know. We've done a few MMA reviews in the past, and we've been nearly stoned to death virtually online.
Yeah.
So we'll see, everybody. Dennis Amaya writes, both shows this week were great. Hearing John talk about Chili's obsessive tweeting made me want to go check out her Twitter, and she has to be one of the dumbest tweeters out there. Also, hearing John's rant on the World Cup also made me laugh out loud. No offense, John, but do you like any other sports between wrestling, besides wrestling and MMA? Anyway, thanks for the great shows. Wrestling and MMA are the primary ones. I follow boxing, but not to the degree of wrestling and MMA.
And you're on a softball team.
I'm on a softball team. I used to be a huge, huge baseball and basketball guy. I wouldn't say I'm as much as I used to, but I used to, when the Raptors first started, the first like four seasons, I probably watched 90% of their games.
Yeah.
I went to 30 games 1 year for the Raptors.
Wow, 30 games?
It was back when they had these things called the Sprite Zone tickets, and it was like $7 a ticket, and I went with one of my buddies like every week.
Quickly, what is the name of your softball team?
Oh, we have not explained this before, but myself, Jason Agnew, and some of you may know Justin Terry and some others, we have joined a softball league, and our name is the Diamond Cutters, And we've actually have made shirts, uniform shirts for our team. And maybe I'll take a picture of it and post it on the Review Away Facebook group for everyone to see our baseball shirts.
The logo is of DDP's hands and then a baseball.
Yeah, it was designed by Josh Scheinman at TSN.
I would totally wear that shirt if you guys sold it.
So we will make sure to post that in the near future.
And then we got...
The last one, Jack Pisco.
Listen to your Raw review and it was great. Nostalgia is great, but hearing you guys tearing the current product to pieces was very enjoyable. I'm still hoping for the Michael Cole turn for this Nexus angle, but if history has taught us anything, the mastermind will be Vince McMahon. Remember the Undertaker's ministry group with Vince as the higher power?
If Vince McMahon is the leader of the group that was in charge of beating him up...
I will stop watching entirely. And that means no more reviews. Because... We would have wasted a solid 2 months of our lives for nothing.
Horrible. So that wraps up this week of Review Away, and we will be back, I guess, Tuesday for our Raw review, and then next week with another edition of Review Away. We encourage everyone to go join our Review Away Facebook group, which you can locate at reviewaway.com, reviewaway.com, where upwards of over 934 members, so we're inching towards 1,000. Way
it'll probably be 933 at some point with the what's his name?
Oh, that's right,
Paid Drag Flood deactivating his account.
Yeah, you deactivators out there are really fucking us up. But nonetheless, we appreciate your participation.
And if you haven't yet done so yet, also join the Law Group, which just surpassed the 2,000 mark.
Big movement. So yeah. We appreciate that. I find over the last year that has become one of the coolest parts of the Law is the interaction on both Twitter and the Facebook group, mm-hmm. where it's like running commentary of the show as it's happening. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's fun during the show to be on the Facebook group.
It absolutely is. For our review next week, we are mixed martial arts fans, and even if you're not, you probably heard of Brock Lesnar defending his title successfully against Shane Carwin two weeks ago.
Yes.
And so I would like to go back to one of Brock Lesnar's WWF pay-per-views. I'd like to review a pay-per-view in which he battled The Undertaker in a biker chain match.
Oh, God.
A pay-per-view that also featured Zach Gowen versus Matt Hardy and also Stephanie McMahon versus Vince McMahon. That would be No Mercy 2003.
Fantastic. No Mercy 2003. This should be that should be a very fun one.
Yeah.
So that's coming up next week. In terms of the song, I want to go to a song that I'm trying to more embrace stuff that you listen to, more unconventional stuff. So I found something that kind of has the dance vibe, the Euro vibe that I listen to, but the entire backbeat of this, and if you took out the lyrics, this would definitely be on your iPod, I find. So it's LaRue with Bulletproof.
Hmm.
Huh.
Oh, this is good. I like it.